When Les Moonves, president and CEO of CBS, the owners of Simon & Schuster, let slip that the Big Five house was in pricing talks with Amazon, the media world did its best to react with shock. Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. Any expression of surprise, though, could only have been for appearance's sake. As close observers of the book world already had guessed, the giant e-tailer is likely negotiating with both SNS and HarperCollins, even as its public brawl with Hachette continues. For close observers of this scene, we can think of none better than Andrew Albany, senior writer for Publishers Weekly, who joins me now as he does every Friday. Welcome back to Beyond the Book, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So indeed, we have learned this week in what must have been a calculated slip of the tongue that Simon & Schuster is having a conversation about pricing with Amazon. So what do we make of this?
That's right. This week, the news, such as it is, confirmed that Simon & Schuster is also in talks with Amazon after parent company head Les Moonves was asked about his view of the Hachette Books Group Amazon dispute. Now, Moonves would concede only the obvious that, you know, Amazon has a very definitive point of view about what should be done in publishing, and that those in publishing are, in his words, not totally copacetic with it. But I think you're right. There are a few things that we should note here. And the first is that, you know, of course, SNS is in talks with Amazon. And as you say, it's probably likely that HarperCollins is as well. After all, these are the three publishers that settled with the Department of Justice right out of the gate in the Apple ebook for price fixing case. And their agreements were all terminated roughly at the same time. So we don't know exactly when their new deals were struck or for how long they last. So we can't say for sure who's actually negotiating with Amazon or who isn't. But it's no surprise that Amazon would be in negotiations with more than one publisher, even though Amazon executives noted at the Apple trial that one of the first things they did after the agency thing went down was that they themselves staggered the publishers in negotiating order so that the deals wouldn't all expire at the same time. They did this to sort of inhibit any whiff of collusion or any potential collective strength by the publishers. Now, I think the question everyone is really wondering about is whether SNS is going to get the same treatment as Hachette is. You know, only time will tell on that. But I think what's notable about Moonves' comment is that, you know, it referenced the complete universe of deals that SNS's parent company CBS has with Amazon. You know, there's TV and music, and, you know, that has to give some leverage for Simon & Schuster that may not exist for Hachette, and probably for HarperCollins too, which owns Fox, even though they're now split into separate companies, I believe. And it's also worth noting that last year, Simon & Schuster and Barnes & Noble were at loggerheads for about 6 months over terms, during which time Barnes & Noble did not fully stock all of Simon & Schuster's titles. You know, somehow that standoff between Barnes & Noble and SNS never generated the same amount of outrage in the publishing community. And I think that, of course, speaks to the greater fears about Amazon and its growing dominance.
Well, an interesting point there. And, you know, part of this, an essential part of this, is the ongoing Apple case and something you followed, again, very closely. News there this week that the damages, which we have been hearing you calculate from time to time, could rise as much as $400 million.
That's right. Under a proposed agreement to settle damages, which we talked about last month, the details of which were filed on Wednesday, Apple has agreed that it will pay as much as $400 million if its holding of liability by Judge Coates is upheld by the Second Circuit. Now, if the case is remanded back to the court for further proceedings, Apple's agreed to settle the case for $50 million. And if the Second Circuit throws the case out entirely, well, then Apple gets off the hook completely. So everything here is contingent upon what happens at the Second Circuit. Consumers shouldn't expect to see the $400 million in refunds quickly. I think it's important to point that out. While the parties this week asked the court for preliminary approval of that settlement, they also asked the court to delay the final process of securing that settlement until after the Second Circuit decides Apple's appeal. And that could take months, you know, possibly years. I wouldn't expect it to take more than a year, but you never know with the Second Circuit. There's quite a backlog there, and this is a complex case. You know, in addition, after the decision comes down from the Second Circuit, Circuit, the settlement would then have to go through the formal approval process, and that will include most likely a public comment period and a final fairness hearing. And there are, of course, numerous logistical details to iron out before those refunds can actually make their way to consumers. So there's also a stroke of good news here, I must say, for the publishers, and that's that in the settlement funds that are collected, which is as much as $400 million, are going to be distributed using the same template as the publisher settlement funds were distributed. That is, they're going to be automatically distributed to consumers as book and ebook credits to their accounts, unless they explicitly opt to get a check instead. In other words, this decision could mean a potential windfall of Apple money that will flow into consumer accounts and then ultimately back into the publisher's coffers in the form of ebook purchases. Now, two things I'll also point out about that is, one, Amazon sold a great number of those books. Thus, the dispute over terms now could really come into play in a couple of years, because we're talking now about what percentage of Apple's money Amazon might capture from those consumer refunds. And also, if I were the publishers, I just want to say I'd be filing a brief with the appeals court to sort of oppose Apple here, because they want to be, I think, vindicated by the court that they didn't fix prices. But at the same time, if the court throws out Apple's price-fixing conviction while it vindicates publishers and their behavior, it also will cost them $400 million. So I'd fire up the lawyers and make sure that Apple's appeal is unsuccessful.
Well, the ironies abound here. And when it comes to Apple, the bet they're placing, if they're just thinking about the money, is $400 million. So they have filed their latest appeal brief, and you've had a look at that.
Yeah, that's right. Apple has filed what I think is probably going to be its final brief with the Second Circuit to overturn its price-fixing liability. And the brief really doubles down on the arguments it made in the original filing back in February, which I know we talked about then. And it's basically that, you know, Judge Coates really botched the case here. You know, what struck me about this filing that was public, I think it came out this week officially, but it was originally filed at the beginning of July. It really underscored the unprecedented nature of Judge Coates' decision. You know, Apple attorneys stress again that its entry was pro-competitive to the ebook market, and that all the instruments that it used to strike this deal with publisher were deemed legal by the court. That is, you know, the simultaneous negotiations that it had with the publishers, the most favored nations clause, and the fact that it used an agency agreement. All that stuff the court held was not illegal. And the court also, you know, acknowledged Apple's independent interests in striking these deals. So on that score, it was a very compelling brief. But where I think Apple kind of misses the mark, in my non-lawyerly opinion, is, as they say, there's a first time for everything. So just because there's no analogous prior cases doesn't mean that Coates' verdict is incorrect here. And it looks to me that in order to reverse Judge Coates, the Second Circuit is really going to have to find some fundamental disagreements with how Judge Coates interpreted the facts in this case, not just how she applied the previous precedents. To me and to the lawyers that I talked to, I think Apple's appeal still seems like a long shot bet. After all, what Judge Coates found is that the publishers were all in agreement that the ebook prices needed to be higher. And Apple came along and gave publishers the tools that they needed to raise those prices. But what really struck me in Apple's brief is that they double down on their own brilliance. You know, they stress in this brief yet again that, yes, they knew the publishers were unhappy with Amazon's $9.99 loss-leading prices. They knew that the publishers thought Amazon's prices were way too low. It knew that they wanted higher prices and that the major publishers all tended to act in parallel fashion. But they claim, we didn't conspire. We just exploited the publishers' fears. I'll give you a quote from that brief. It says that Apple used the leverage created by the market dynamics and the publishers' well-publicized antipathy toward Amazon to enter the market is quintessential competition, not conspiracy. Now, personally, I find that an extraordinary contention. And if I were the publishers looking back on their little dance with Apple here, I think this should probably serve as a lesson. Basically, they got used by Apple, and it cost them dearly in terms of $166 million in refunds and all the onerous compliance that they've had to deal with since the settlements. For all that trouble, I personally think that the publishers probably deserve to see $400 million in Apple money eventually find its way back to them in terms of ebook credits. And while Apple might have seemed like a lifeline back in 2009 when they were striking this deal, they were admittedly exploiting the publisher's panic over Amazon, and that shouldn't be lost on anyone. I think Apple, it turns out, may have been just a little too clever for anyone's good.
Well, you know, Andrew, the Greeks had a word for that, of course.
And that word?
Hubris. Just too clever by half. And it ends up tangling you up. Well, Andrew Albany, senior writer for Publishers Weekly, always fascinating analysis, really gets to the heart of the matter, particularly with the question of the Apple ebook price fixing case, but with all matters related to the book world. And we appreciate you joining us every week here on Beyond the Book.
My pleasure, as always.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, find us on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, beyondthebook.com. Our engineer and co-producer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.